All right, guys, another episode of the Hobby with Cage National Treasure Series, but this is going to be a fun one, right? You guys have already heard two-thirds of the dynamic card ladder team. I had Chris and Christina on. Josh, I didn't invite him. I didn't have him on because he wasn't at the National. But I said, you know what? We can have some fun because the collecting community, there are more people who don't go to the National and experience it from home, experience it from their phone, their laptop, from content, you name it, then actually go, even though there were 120,000 people there. So let's get Josh on from Card Ladder, Cardboard Chronicles. You guys already know him. Let's get him on and let's chat about the National from a perspective of somebody who didn't go. Josh, welcome.
Yes, thanks for having me, Cage. Well, you're getting twice as much content out of the Card Ladder team by doing it this way, so that's smart.
This is genius. Yeah. I should have everybody split up like this. You know, the two thick guys, I should have made them like four thick. It would have been great. Double coverage. I could have had quadruple coverage. It's we're having fun. But listen, something was missing. I mean, Chris and Christina, that's a dynamic duo. But for folks like me who watch the crossover religiously for as long as I can stay awake. Yeah. And starting it at midnight for me on the East Coast, like I have woken up at like, you know, 1:30, you know, like, oh, they're still there going. Oh, yeah. I'll watch again. You know, I guess I should wake up. That's happened. But you guys, you have a great chemistry.
Yeah.
And it was definitely, there was something missing in the episode when I do a Card Ladder episode and you're not there. So I'm happy to have you on. So you did not go to the National. How many Nationals have you been to before this?
Let's see. My first one was 2018 and then 2019 and then nothing in 2020. So I've been to four.
This one was crazy. I will tell you right off the bat, the things that you didn't miss, and then you can tell me the things that maybe you did miss by going there. You didn't miss not having air conditioning. That was a pretty bad one. You didn't miss blisters and 20,000 steps a day, although I have a feeling you probably would have just high-posted and hung out in the Card Ladder booth. It wasn't a cool spot. I'm sure they told you. It wasn't a pretty cool spot. I will ask you about it, but there's one thing I think you did probably miss. I bet you would have had the cojones to ask Drake a question while he was up on stage. The rest of your team didn't. I bet you would have, like, you were standing there with your hand up, like, I have a question for Drake. That would have been an epic hobby moment. It would have been fun. So you're sitting at home. How do you consume the National? What do you do? You got the map, you got circles, you got, like, content. Talk to me about it. You know, you're home. How do you get your fill of National when you're not in Chicago?
Yeah. Well, I definitely didn't miss the heat. Apparently that was really bad. I obviously missed, you know, hanging around, you know, guys like yourself, Chris, the team. That was really the hardest part, just like not being there and talking to my friends. What did I see? How did I consume it? It was just like Instagram, really. People were posting stories, lives. I told Chris this, though. The thing that's funny about it, the people that I know and I'm friendly with are just like so consumed by all of it. They're not posting anything.
Yes.
So the people that are posting are more of like the, you know, like the companies, like the corporate accounts and like the content creators, influencers, flippers. That's the type of content that was being posted because that's, you know, that's like their job while they're there. And the people that are collectors, people that are my friends are just like talking to each other and like none of them are responding to me. And so it's definitely like this very strong FOMO feeling of like, gosh, I know they're all talking to each other. That's why they're not talking to me. But, you know, that's just kind of the reality.
It's funny you say that, right? Because, I mean, in prepping for this episode, I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, so, you know, what am I going to ask, right? He wasn't at the National, but obviously he consumed a ton of the National from being there. I'm sure he talked to Chris a lot. I'm sure he talked to the crew a lot. I'm sure, you know, he might have even made some deals, and we'll get up to that in a second. And I thought to myself, I'm like, you know, what did I do to help people who weren't there, you know, as a content creator? And I remember when I first got there, I did a live. It was like, you know, a half hour just walking around the show. There was, you know, it really hadn't even opened up yet. You know, they let us in. I think it was Wednesday afternoon and it wasn't packed. People, you know, were setting up their tables and, you know, I was trying to give sort of like the scope of just the size of it. But I only got into like, you know, 1/10 of it in a half an hour, you know, walking around the vintage area, the whole deal, answering questions and, you know, trying to like, you know, answer questions in the chat and that kind of stuff. And then I didn't do it again. That was my first half hour there. And then, you're running from here to here and you're involved in so many things. So it's funny that that's how you start off saying that the content is almost sort of like one-sided, right? Because the people who are there, who are people you would follow, people you would be friends with, people you would have a conversation with, they're so consumed by it that they're not taking their camera out to show you, look at this deal. I found a penny on the floor and I turned it into this Michael Jordan PSA 10 86 Fleer. Like, that's the content you see, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so what did you do? Like, did you auction houses? I mean, where did you turn?
I've been to four nationals, and every time I'm there, you're just, it's so chaotic and you're so consumed. So I have a lot of like understanding for why people aren't creating content. And I did it the way, it's funny you said it, because when I went to my first national, I was the same way. I like filmed me walking in and like filmed the first couple things I saw when there weren't 20 people around me, just getting my bearings. And then that was it.
That's it. Like, done.
It's like, once you get to the center of it, it's like, well, see you in, 5 days. Like, it's over. You know, you're just, even when you're just like chatting in a small group of people, it feels like you can't even like get to the next person in a conversation, because it's just so, you're just so focused, because, you know, we're so used to being online and we have short attentions and we can kind of shift between different things quickly. But when you're in person, you know, you're a lot more focused and, you know, your attention is much more focused. So you're asking about like the specific type of content. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, it's not my type of content, so it was tough, but I needed something. So I watched it all for you guys. Like, I consumed it all and took it all in, did my data analytics of like what I saw. And it's pretty much,
this is a married man speaking. This, you know what he just said? He's just like, yes, I don't like Bravo, but my wife enjoys it, so I will watch it for
it's
you.
Like watching a season of Bachelor or something.
You know? I'll watch The Bachelor because we have to. But I did think, this for you, collector.
I think Brett started talking about this in terms of the quarterback flipping. He called it like trashy reality TV.
Yep.
That's kind of what it was. Like, you're kind of like, it's technically content and it's related to cards, but it's mostly like, you know, like representatives of different companies or, you know, people they hire to speak for their brand for the week, and they're supposed to make content. And there's a lot. I enjoyed some of the flipper content. Like, I was talking about it on Crossover Ryan, Card Collector 2s. I thought it was interesting because he just like put a camera at his booth and just like filmed everything and just like showed how he makes deals and stuff. So there was a lot of like fun deal making going on, which I was probably watching more of that. And then Nick, you know, from the Card Ladder team was posting daily, which was, you know, thank God. Otherwise I would have had nothing collector based to watch. And he, you know, like turned it around, and because most people focus on the dealer booths, he was focusing on the people walking around, which is fun. So that content was really good.
Josh, let's hit that, right? Because I mean, where you're going with it is, you know, thank goodness they did that. I would have had no collector content to watch.
Yeah.
It's a valuable conversation to have, right? Because there's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of content, myself included. And, you know, for the last month, it's been talkie-talkie. It's been about the national. I haven't really shown cards. I mean, we talked about cards with people. Robert Edward Auction came on, and we talked about what cards they had in their auction and some of the cool stories and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's all card-related, but I'm not posting my mail day as part of the show. I'm not doing, you know, that kind of stuff. I will have some stuff coming. I won Leland's auction. It'll be in the mail soon, and I'll post it. But there's a lot of content out there that is collector-based, but there's way more content that is just – I mean, what would you call it? Sort of just hobby adjacent?
It's more like media. It's more like hobby media, where, you know, you think of it maybe like in terms of the media in sports. They don't play sports, but they cover it. So there's a bit of that going on, where they don't collect the cards. They don't necessarily understand the nuances of it and like the values and stuff like that. But they know the surface level stuff of like what companies there are and like what services you can do to get involved. And then, you know, there's some decent knowledge about like the different players in the space and like who has what types of cards and stuff like that. So I would call them like hobby media, I guess.
All right. I mean, listen, that makes sense. So I heard a rumor that for the next national, Cleveland, they're going to actually try to do this. I think they called it the Flight House. It's a hobby house of people from like the Burbank, what's it called, Codfather and Talon. And I heard you were invited to actually stay in the
I have too many. House. I own cards, so they didn't invite me. That's how that works.
That's the rule. Like, you can only go if you have no cards at all. Like,
I don't know. I actually don't even know who's all in it. I think Chad probably owns a lot of cards, so I don't want to offend everybody.
I'm sure most people own some kind of cards, right? Even the people who open stuff, they get stuck with something, right? So, but yeah, I mean, so there's collector content out there. I mean, would you say there's enough collector content, but just because it's the National, the collectors are out there doing their thing and not making it? Or would you like to see more collector content? This is something I've seen on your story. This is something, yeah. it's a drum that, you know, you definitely beat now and again. What do you think? Should there be more collector content?
There should be way more. The balance is way, way off. I think a lot of that's just like the personality of the collector isn't really driven to make content. And I remember when I first started making Cardboard Chronicles, like it was very uncomfortable for me just because like I'm not the most outgoing person. I don't, you know, you won't see me at the center of the party going crazy. So it was difficult. But when I started interviewing all these collectors, I found that they were very similar to me, where like they didn't have high energy. They didn't want to like, you know, hype up too much stuff. So it turned into kind of like this, you know, calm, quiet conversation type show, which I enjoyed.
Yep.
So you can do it, but that content just like doesn't get consumed as much. Like people just aren't making. Yeah, it's just like, and I don't care for like you know, editing the videos too much. Like I just basically like upload it as I record it. So it became
familiar.
Yeah, I mean, your show is pretty similar to what I was doing, where I did start branching out into like interviewing more than just collectors, and I did kind of a little bit of everything. But in general, like it's just, there's just not enough of it, because I don't know if it's just that like the personality of collectors again, or if it's just not, you know, getting the clicks. So people are, you know, feeling like it's not worth their time to maybe keep posting content. You know, I get all that. And a lot of it's like privacy too. People just don't want to share their collections. And if you're not a collector and you're just in it for the content space and your background is in marketing or content, it's just much easier for you to like jump in and start making content. And there's not really any pushback on like, you know, are you a big time collector? People will consume it. So they're just going to keep doing it.
It's funny. And also with, I mean, just to add on, you tell me whether I'm on the right track here. A lot of the people who came in the last couple of years, they are consuming content and they are driven more towards the breaking content, the flashy content. You know, it's I don't want to say that no one came in the last couple of years as a collector, but the collector base who was here, I think we'll go to the National Treasures, right? We'll say at the National. Let's say there's two tables at the National next to each other, all right? And one of them has a card on it, a grail type of card. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the card you're going to have to go after, but it's dirty and it's dingy and there's no signage and, you know, but it's, you know, you're going to find a cool card there. The other table next to it, it's got a whole bunch of modern stuff, but it's got these great signs and flashing lights and all kinds of stuff. I think that's a kind of cool comparison because the recent folks are all going to head to that. You know, people are going to be there with cameras making content because it's going to get views. It's going to be flashy. But the folks who might have been here a couple years before 2017, 2018, they're probably going to head over to that card, not care that it's dirty and dingy and that the guy is, you know, sitting there picking his nose because they want the card.
Right.
It's about the card, right?
Right. Yeah, this has been my frustration since the boom started, was that, you know, the welcoming mat that we set out for people coming in was geared towards like the flipping, investing and, you know, money making, get rich quick stuff. And I just knew like if that's where people landed, even if they came from a genuine place of like I collected as a kid, I saw an article on ESPN that they're, you know, expensive now. Let me jump in and see what it's about. And then the first thing they see is really more of like this breaking, flipping base card thing. I felt that they were going to get burned quickly and then just like be more likely to leave. Whereas if they discovered collecting content, maybe rediscovered their old collection, figured out their favorite player, you know, saw what cards were out there. They found, you know, Brett's pod, this pod, and they found stuff. They learned more about the hobby. I felt like they could have had it both ways. They could have like enjoyed the space and then also figured out the lane to make some money and like improve their collection, et cetera.
I think I felt like the
overall landscape didn't support that.
I think it's the difference between kind of like what people wanted to commit time-wise and effort-wise, right? Because I'll tell you, you know, I mean, I've always been in, out, like 09, 10, 11. I was doing UFC stuff, but then, you know, stopped around 15, 16. And then all of a sudden, 17, you're like, all right, 17, 18, I can grade cards for $6 and base cards. And, you know, like that was a cool way of like, you know, going and buying, you know, creating a bankroll and buying the cards that I wanted. But that buying the cards that I wanted was the step that wasn't taken. You know what I mean? That's the below the superficial. That people came in, they just heard the, wait, I can buy base cards and flip them and keep doing this and keep making money and money without actually keeping that money in the ecosystem and turning it into like a Babe Ruth or, right, you know, a Michael Jordan or a LeBron James. That was the second part that I think just didn't happen enough.
You know? Yeah. And Chris and I get really defensive about this because it is still a zero-sum game of where everyone's money goes. And if someone is spending their money on grading and flipping and making money and they put it back in the hobby, it's the same as it was before. Like the money stays in the hobby. So like I have no beef with the flipping. I have no problems with any, you know, how you make the money if you put it back in. But if you're moving it out and buying a house and a car and a, you know, you're actually like, now you're removing money from the space. So now I actually have some criticisms around this is affecting the rest of us, which is, you know, you can buy what you want. It's your money. But if you're going to glorify flipping and then taking the money and taking it out of the space, I feel like that should not be as celebrated as someone who is keeping the money in the space. And for the main reason of like, if you're making content and you're trying to convince me that this space is something I should jump into and spend my money on, but then I watch you take your money and flip it out of the space and buy it something else, you know, how could I have any confidence that there's long-term value in here if you're not even keeping your money in? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But is it fair then, you know, let's say I'll use myself as an example, right? What if my opinion is that car prices are still a little too high?
Yeah.
Right. And maybe the more prudent thing to do is sell some of your stuff now and put it in a damn CD where they're paying 5.5% for the next 6 or 9 months, and then use that interest to buy cars, use the money and come back in 6 months, something like that. That's not what you mean, right? I mean, as long as the intent is to keep it in that ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's always intent, right? Like I sold my LeBron RPA.
Yep.
I kept it in a CD, like literally what you just said. And I just was like, and you've seen over the last like 3 months, like I'm buying heavy because I basically just like took that money that I sold for the RPA and I'm buying back at a lower price. So it's obviously like the way you do it, the timing, you know, I'm not going to like get specific on it, but it's more of the intent, you know, like if your intent is to eventually end up with zero cards and have a mansion, I'm just like not that excited to like be involved in supporting your content. But if your goal is to like end up with a super high-end card and you want to like eventually move your way up, like I'm going to support you. I think that's amazing and fun, and it's something that I you know, want to follow.
So I have a conversation I want to have with you that I don't think, I mean, you could tell me if you've ever had this with anybody before, maybe not in the way that I think we're gonna have, and then we'll come back to the national, maybe 5 minutes, right? Don't get nervous. It's gonna be right up your alley, I promise. So I'm probably a little older than you. I collected early 90s. Like I collected, you know, Shaq brought me into basketball cards. And I remember going to McDonald's and opening foil packs, and Shaq was card number 50, you know, and that was like a cool card. And, you know, Michael Jordan was in the set, but he was not, he was Shaq, you know. And I remember, you know, buying Fleer Ultra and buying metal. They sold it, you know, CVS, Dwayne Reed, the first metal that I remember had that like half moon shaped Michael Jordan, you know, it was like a die cut. They're one in a box. And if you were really unscrupulous, you could figure out which pack had it because you just squeezed the top left corner and it pinched the die-cut card. Anyway, yeah. So you collected, I think, a couple years after me. And what came out of that was the late 90s. It's a very different type of card because they're scarcity and they're numbered. Like, you know how many of the cards there are. Like, I have been so resistant to PMGs because I said, all right, you know, how's a PMG so much better than Scoring Kings? Scoring Kings is a cool card. Check out the lightning on that. But the thing about it is lesson one and then lesson two. Lesson one, I'll never know how many damn Scoring Kings there were. Like I could figure out the labels. I could figure out, like I can come close probably. I've done the math. You know, I feel like, you know, that you know, like Good Will Hunting or whatever it is. Like I could probably figure out something, but I'll never know. And the PSA 10 that I remember selling for like $20,000, Michael Jordan, you know, that was a manufactured scarcity based on grading and not just the, you know, not like, so the PMG is that there's 10 greens and 90 reds and, you know, football 15 and, you know, and 135, but that's a real scarcity there. And the condition matters, but not as much because you know how many there are rarity. Now I'm going to take this. So this is a lesson, by the way, that there's a lot of resistance to. People who have been around for a little while, like, I don't care about those numbers. I don't care about the scarcity, you know. And they'll also point to stuff that's going on now. Like, okay, gold out of 10 looks fantastic, but it's the same card that the base and the mojo out of 25 and the black 101 and the orange and the green and the tiger stripe and the Monopoly and the whole deal. So is it really scarce? Should I really pay more for the 25 orange, the gold fifth? Like, it's all the same card. Different conversation. Here's where I go. I'm very nervous about my current collection. And it ties back to your 90s, late 90s cards, your basketball, your PMGs, your rubies, the stuff that people are chasing now, the golds, the stuff that you chase, the exquisites that are numbered, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that you know there's only 10 of, 15 of, you name it. Vintage cards. I've gone down a rabbit hole with Kurtz Card Care. I know you've heard of this guy.
I've seen it. Yeah,
I know you've heard of it. Don't get too crazy with it. But basically, I'm a fan of old baseball cards. I had a really nice Mickey Mantle 52 tops PSA 5. Sold it. I have some really nice, you know, Gaudi cards. My goal is to sell stuff, keep it in the ecosystem, and upgrade to a better card. I would love to own a Mantle 8, a Mantle 9. That was always my goal, right? I mean, the 9's probably not happening anytime in my life. Right. An 8's probably not even happening anytime in my life. But maybe a 7, you know? And I'm thinking that's my goal. I could really consolidate all my cards and get to one of those cards. There are thousands of 52 Mantles. It's not a rare card. There's right. a lot of demand for it, but it's not a rare card. I've watched this guy, not trimming. Well, let's not get into trimming. We're going to keep this very narrow. But I've watched this guy take cards that are probably 3s, 4s, and he'll wet them. He'll wet the back.
Yeah, the moisture corner, stuff. Yep.
The corner will, like, inflate, right? And the corner will inflate. And, you know, I saw him work this week on a 60-something Mantle. I don't forget what it was, 64 maybe. And it had a little, like, indent in his cheek on the card. It was like somebody put, like, a little, like, their nail, like, fingernail in it. Now, PSA gets that, and it's – I mean, you're crushing the card for that, not to mention the corners. And he takes a little solution, and he lets it in there, and he touches it in a brush, the whole deal, and, you know, lets it sit. And 5 minutes later, it is completely gone. The water, like, puffed the card up in that specific area, and it's completely flat. The card's polished, surface areas, you name it, the whole – every. He's not adjusting the card, right? He's not touching – he's not like, trimming it. I don't want to get into this with you. The question I have for you is, am I being an idiot? Because now I don't want high-grade vintage baseball cards. I don't want a Mantle 7 because I'm just going to assume that it was a 4 somebody messed with.
Yeah.
And does that now mean I should just hang on to my Shaq PMG, my Griffey Ruby, and just go that front? What do I do as a baseball card collector? What do I do?
I think I wouldn't – I think he's glorifying – how easy it is a bit. Like, I don't think that every card that he comes across, he turns a 4 to an S7. I think it's probably he's showing you the ones that turn out really well. And then a lot of them, he's not able to do much with it. You know, maybe it goes from a 4 to a 5 or a 4 to 4.5. So I wouldn't put as much stock into it. I know what you're saying. Like, you're implying that, like, the supply is going to spike on higher grades because he's going to move them up.
I have a 5. I think if somebody... I mean, look, forget about him. Somebody took, like, a little edge off the 5. That could be a 7. Sure. You know, I mean, like, you know, it's just why pay more? Why pay a premium for a card that is, you know, that is slightly better, even though it's not exactly rare? Use the Mantle 52 as an example. Or you just think, it's just the way it is.
Well, look, I mean, I don't collect vintage, so I don't really want
to. That's why I have this conversation with you.
I don't want to do it from a perspective of like, my opinion on vintage because it's, you know, I'm biased, but I have a great respect for the vintage space, and I feel it's incredibly important to the history of the hobby. And a lot of those cards, you know, are undeniably, you know, super important. They should be valuable. I appreciate that people collect them. I think if you like vintage, I don't think that's enough of a reason to leave vintage. Honestly, like, not even close. Because if you think about some of the really high grade ones, a lot of those are like pop ones and stuff, dude. Like, some of those really big chase cards. Someone sold a bunch of their PSA 10, like, 1970 top set on PWCC. You know, I'm sure you covered that, but like most of those are pop one. There's like a Jerry West pop one. Like, this Kurt guy is not going to start turning nines into tens. I promise you that.
That's a different landscape. I'm not
different,
getting tens.
Different area. He's not cracking out PSA 9 Kareem rookies. You know, like, right. That's not happening. So, you might be onto something. There might be like a flood of like PSA 6 to 7 range of vintage, but I think there always will be a space where condition rarity is going to have its lane, and it's like the really high grade and they're really scarce. So, you know, if you're into that vintage stuff, I think you're still okay in that area. But if you're asking me, should you come over to the dark side of like 90s? I mean, think about it this way, Cage. I came from the late 90s, you're right.
Yep.
But my focus now primarily is on the 2000s. So I'm right. Collecting something that I have no childhood nostalgia over. I had no recollection of these cards. In 2003, I was in high school not collecting. So like, I didn't know anything about these cards until I came back in 2016. So you still can give yourself, you know, the space to like move into something you didn't have nostalgia for, and then maybe still have like a small PC or PC on the stuff that you had as a kid that you don't care as much about the value potentially, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. My thought, by the way, is vintage, just stick with low grade. Like you need to have a 52 mantle, just take a nicely centered sure. one or something like that. You know what I mean? Like I know people are paying, you know, $300,000-$400,000 for sevens. And it's stuck in my brain. Like, was that a five?
Yeah, I'd be in the, either really low or really high. I wouldn't be in the middle.
Yes. Yeah, so that's I think we probably fall exactly in the same sphere on that. I think the safer way is just stick with the stuff that you know is rare. That PMGs, man. I mean, only a couple of years of them. Have they gotten ahead of themselves?
I personally think the 90s stuff is a little overvalued at the moment because there's so much emphasis on the sets that people are paying 20 grand for players that, you know, don't usually warrant 20 grand. I mean, that Shaq Green sale for 175 is an astounding number. You know, that was the most ever paid for a Shaq card by like multiples. And I'm not saying Shaq didn't deserve it. He's a fantastic player of the set. I would just be a little wary of jumping in and spending, you know, that much.
But didn't the Jerry Rice green sell for over $100,000? Yeah, I mean, there's 15 of those.
That's a lot of money for. I love Jerry Rice. He's the greatest receiver of all time. But that's
pretty sure there's a second one, lower grade, in PWCC right now, and it's already at like $50,000. Another one. This is a PSA 6. This one.
So yeah,
people pay for those cards. They've become sort of like, you know, the chase. It's very interesting to watch.
So just follow the timeline of like. It's probably linked to the age of the people that collected that, and they're in their like my age, like mid to late 30s, early 40s, and they have more money, you know. So that's going to keep growing, and then you'll probably move up into the years after that, the years following, and eventually you'll get to the, you know, the nostalgia for 2012 Prism, and like it just kind of has its cycles, I guess, we're going through.
I have some questions for you, and I'll let you go because this is, you know, it's a half hour show. Number one. Does LeBron actually make his team better?
Man, I when this show turned from you and Andrew to just you, I just was like, I don't even know who I'm going to argue with anymore. I just like, how did that? How did his pick work? We did that fantasy draft league. He took Ben Simmons in like the second round. How did that work out? I forgot to ask him.
Probably pretty good. Probably
did he
pretty
even
good.
Play? He made an appearance. Points if you don't play.
He made an appearance in the comments yesterday because I had Shea Wave Vlogs on, and he said that his partner wasn't there the first day because he was Shabbatting. That was Shea Wave's vlog's way of saying he was celebrating the Sabbath. He was Shabbatting. So Andrew, of course, showed up in the comments and said, Shabbatting? Like, what is this? Like, you know, like what are you talking about?
Well, I'll just like randomly tag him in some LeBron video and see if I can get him to bite.
That's it. You got to do it. So, I mean, LeBron. So the real question on LeBron, his stuff's come down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So take this two ways. One, do you think that it's time to buy? Because obviously you're putting your money in your mouth. And two, he eventually is going to stop playing. Do you watch what happens to prices of people like, let's call Tom Brady, you know, one of the other kind of goats? And you see Brady's prices have, you know, they're still coming down.
Yeah.
You worry that, you know, when LeBron stops, the same kind of thing might happen to his stuff?
Well, Brady also retired like during the part where every card was going down.
Yes,
so I'm not sure if it was like really related to his retirement. I don't really treat those events with much of anything, to be honest. Like even when they win championships, I don't know that it really matters a whole lot. It just sort of either goes up and right slowly for some of these guys, really, really slowly, like MJ and LeBron and Brady. If you just kind of like look at the holistic, what does it end up doing over time? That's the trend. and you can kind of ignore the ups and downs of it, or, you know, there may be some event that really does trigger it, like an unexpected thing. But I don't really see anything unexpected coming for LeBron. We know he's going to retire. We know he's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's already got the scoring record, which did nothing, by the way. There was so much Facebook group posts like, buy this before he breaks. He's going to break it tomorrow. Like, why would I already know he's going to break the scoring record. Why would I pay more today? It is whatever.
I mean, listen, so is the market, the timing of when he broke it and what was going on with the overall market. I mean, you know, I sold my RPA the night before he broke the record. Like, it was literally like hours before he broke the record and took a loss on the card.
Yeah. So that didn't really, you know, it didn't help. I don't know. I just keep buying it because, like, I think it's a good value at this point. I can buy more of them than I could last year. So that's what I'm doing.
All right. I mean, for the national, and then I'll ask one kind of hobby question after that. Assuming you're at Cleveland, you're not too cool for school.
I'll be there.
What's something maybe you saw in the content that you watched, or something you thought that was missing that you'd like to see incorporated at Cleveland? Maybe a different setup of the space, you know, I don't know, air conditioning. Like, yeah. You got anything? You got anything that comes to mind?
I would, I think I've already seen their drawing of Cleveland, so I'm kind of spoiling it and I'm giving the answer that what they're doing, but I would separate corporate from dealers, like, much more, like, I would basically put the corporate, like, around the edges instead of in the middle. That's what I would do. Because I feel like a lot of the dealers, like, especially some of the high profile ones, people that have really nice stuff to show off, they were, like, kind of slammed into corners and stuff. And the real focus of national for me has always been the cards, and the corporate is good. Like, we should have it, but it isn't the reason people go. So you should make it, like, accessible to get to the corporate stuff, but not make it the focal point. You know what I mean? Like, the focal point is the cards and the dealers, and that's why everyone's there. There's people literally, like, in the lobby spilling over because there's not enough space for them to deal and be around cards. There wasn't, like, an overflow in the corporate space. I saw a lot of videos where, like, there was tons of open space, a lot of wasted space in the corporate area where we could have used that for, you know, having more kids trading on the floor, to be frank. Yeah. So that'd be my focus. Everything else, I mean, the air conditioning, obviously, like Wi-Fi, those are obvious ones. I don't really see much that can be improved. I think it's I heard your one. I listened to the one with Nat, and he kind of said, like, he doesn't really want it to get too far ahead. And I agree, because it is kind of nice to have this. I don't remember what word he chose, but, like, you know, kind of keeping it, like, old school feeling and not introducing too much innovation and kind of keeping it the way it is. I agree with that as well.
So, I mean, the only thing I'll say is the corporate side, I mean, they pay a lot more for their booths. Yeah. You know what I mean? They pay a lot more for their space. And, you know, and I also will say, I like what you're saying. It's not, hey, stick corporate in the corner or have them separate from the show. Because, yeah, people do come for the cards. They come for the deals. But, I mean, the last couple nationals, there are cards that were focal points of the national, for me at least, that were in the corporate area. You know, being able to, like, hold up that 9.5 SGC mantle, you know what I mean? People were taking pictures with it. You know, the one that sold for, I don't know, $12 million or whatever the heck it sold for, right? I mean, that was a cool thing to have there. And you only get those things, you know, from corporate bringing their cards, their auctions. I mean, you know, Robert Edward, I was there. They had $2 million items. I know that's not a huge thing. But, you know, for an auction house like them, it was a Babe Ruth bat, which was pretty cool. They're having people hold Babe Ruth, like, you know, use that. And, you know, Heritage has just a sick setup. So I like that. I like what you're saying, which is kind of, you know, like a supermarket. The healthy food on the edges. You know what I mean? Like, put the corporate.
Dude, there was a freaking line of people to make a deal with $50 cards and $100 cards with Ryan. And there was not a line to take pictures with $1 million cards. I'm just telling you, like, people want to do the deals. They want to be involved. They want to know that they're, like, cards that they can conceivably buy, sell, and trade.
Does the line matter? Because I'll flip this on you. I mean, there was a line 100 people long to see Gary Vee too.
In terms of, like, meeting him, the influencer, the person?
Cards.
But he was also, like, dealing and like, involved in the wheeling and dealing part of it. He was actually a dealer. He wasn't, like, he had the corporate thing, but, like, he was more of a buy-sell trade. So people want to be involved in that. They want to, like, be involved in that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, he was selling cards too, but you know what I'm saying? Sometimes the long line, I mean, you got to be careful what you ask for. I mean, there, you know, the National opens it up to, you know, Logan Paul coming in to sell Prime. He's going to have a hell of a long line there too.
Sure.
you know? But okay, so the last thing, just because we don't have enough collector content, we don't have enough people, not everybody tunes in midnight on a Friday night. But the folks who can't, who, you know, may hear this, this will probably be the part that I clip. What do you think about the hobby? What do you think about the hobby going forward? What do you think of, you know, as you look back to where we are right now? I'm not going to ask you what inning we're in, right? This is fluffy stuff. This is, you know, easy answer. Somebody like you who's been around and has been collecting for a long time, who was here before the run-up, saw the run-up, you know, actually sold some cards and has now bought back in. You're riding the various cycles here. What would you tell somebody who maybe got in, you know, when it was high, or maybe is watching this, thinking about getting into the hobby and collecting? Not what inning.
We're at a point now where the prices are more conducive to people coming in and buying and enjoying it and potentially making some money going forward. So, you know, if you were talking big game and you were excited to pay for all-time highs at 10x what they are now 2 years ago, why would you not also want to pay now when it's 10 times cheaper and there's more, you know, there's more, way more opportunity now if your goal is to, like, you know, move up in the space and get bigger cards and grow your collection. Now it's easier to do it now than it was 2 years ago. I was pushing back 2 years ago of, like, you know, it's great that you want to join the hobby, but be careful dropping the kinds of money you may want to drop because you are paying all-time highs. It's coming off 10x growth. But now that it's, you know, the other way, I can more confidently say, like, stuff's cheaper. It's more fun to get into it. You can buy more with your money. And it's, I think the entry point is pretty solid right now. And there's a lot more people collecting than you think. You know, like, I complain about the influencers and that kind of stuff, but I still think that's the vast minority of the space. That's just what the content we see is. But the actual majority is a lot of great people, a lot of great friendships, relationships, people in the space that are willing to help you get into it more and guide you kind of through what you want to do. And I think now is a great time to jump in.
Can't say it better myself. And that is why, even though you weren't there in Chicago, you are a national treasure. Thanks, Josh. I love talking to you, man.
Yep, thanks.